Hello and welcome to the Tackle HIV Talking Stigma podcast. I'm Gareth Thomas, and throughout this series, I will be talking to some well-known guests about stigma and resilience. What is it like to experience it, how to overcome it, and what needs to be done to make stigma a thing of the past. Now for today's episode. This episode contains adult language.
So welcome to Tackle HIV with Gareth Thomas and the Talking Stigma podcast series. I'm Helen McDowell from Vive Healthcare, and throughout this series, we're talking to Gareth and other well-known guests about stigma and resilience. Joining Gareth and I today is a much-loved and respected TV personality, author, adventurer, campaigner, and former Special Forces soldier and Royal Marine Commando, Jason Fox, otherwise known as Foxy. Now, Foxy has a huge and long successful career in the military, having joined the Royal Marine Commandos at the age of 16 before progressing to be a sergeant in the Special Boat Service. After 20 years of military service, Foxy was medically discharged, having been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Since then, he's been one of the longest-serving directing staff in the popular TV series SAS Who Dares Wins, and also the presenter of the investigative documentary Meet the Drug Lords, Inside the Real Narcos. Hosting his own podcast series, his third book, Embrace the Chaos, will soon be published. Foxy's a very passionate campaigner for a number of different causes and has taken on phenomenal challenges, rowing unsupported across the Atlantic with a team to raise funds for the NSPCC, trekking to the North Pole to raise awareness about premature birth, kayaking the length of the Yukon River for Royal Navy charities, and is often found talking and educating people about mental health, stigma, challenges, and how best to cope. That's quite a CV. We're very excited to have you with us today, Foxy.
That's the most professionally read poem I've ever read. That was awesome.
So more than 40 years since the first case of HIV was reported, and living with HIV now is very different to how it was then. We've learned a lot about the virus since that very first case, but attitudes have not kept up with the science, and that's why we're here to talk about some of the issues that hold us back, and that is stigma. And stigma is not isolated to HIV, and that is why we are super excited to have Foxy with us here today to really bust that myth and talk a bit more openly about stigma and how it manifests in different parts of society and what we can do to talk about it more openly. Just digging a bit into the HIV side, most people living with HIV have experienced stigma in one form or another through their experience, whether that's being excluded or shunned by family and friends or discriminated against at work or elsewhere. The fear of stigma and the fear of HIV often sadly prevents people from getting tested and seeking the healthcare that actually could give them a very healthy and happy life. This increases the grip of HIV on people who are sadly most vulnerable from it. We also see that HIV increases the rate of anxiety and depression in people who are impacted by it. And the stigma, again, plays a really huge part on that. Gareth, as someone openly living with HIV, can you share why? You know, there's huge numbers of issues there, but what's helped and made you sort of feel motivated with the Tackle HIV campaign?
I just think it's a case of living, as Foxy has, living with a version of stigma, which a lot of people don't tend to associate with, and that's a sense of self-stigma. Everybody has this opinion that stigma is this external force where people judge you. But sometimes when you judge yourself and you stigmatize against yourself, then it can take a lot to re-educate yourself. And what you find when you re-educate yourself about something and you feel a lot better about who you are, it still becomes something very difficult to find the acceptance, because other people, you have an empathy with other people because you understand why they feel this stigma, but it becomes very difficult then to be openly honest and authentic with other people, because you understand that other people, whether it's through the coming from the same background as you, whether it's coming from the same community, the same way of upbringing, they're going to think the same as you used to once think. So it's really important that people, especially, you know, as Foxy does, especially people with a certain level of platform, whatever that platform may be, need to use that platform rather than just to self-promote themselves or to financially gain from that. I think if people have a platform and are able to do good in society, to create a better society for other people who are living with that stigma, whatever that stigma may be, then I feel the Tackle HIV campaign is one set up, because it helps create an environment and helps educate people around HIV, therefore the community of people living with HIV and the people affected by it, i.e. the families, friends of people living with it, can live in a better, freer society and have the ability to be more authentic.
Great. And Foxy, now coming to you around sort of, and obviously you're very passionate about mental health campaigning, and I enjoyed your article in Men's Health recently, and obviously on that you touched on self-stigma as well as the broader stigmas around mental health. Not so sure about your love of burpees. That was a little...
Who loves burpees? Know, do you love
exactly.
burpees?
He did. He said that was his favourite exercise.
I love burpees because I hate them. I like if there's something I don't like, I embrace it. Well, I think that knowing that you have the ability and the discipline to embrace stuff that you don't like is empowering. You gain strength from it. You feel there's a sense of pride. You know, whether it's waking up in the morning and going, you know, everyone's going on about these bloody cold dips and cold. I do it personally. I don't go on about it, but ultimately, I don't do it for my health, really. I do it for my mental health because I know that I don't like it. And I'm like, right, I'm going to get in that shower. I get in, it's horrible. I get out and I'm like, the sense of achievement I've got from doing something that makes me feel uncomfortable, the same with burpees. And I suppose in a convoluted way, it has been the same. And I've learned all that from my embracing the stigma in my head, mainly, in fact, predominantly in my head about, you know, my issue, which was mental health. But yeah.
How do you get to the point though, right? What really interests me is how do you get to the point of being able to embrace it? Because I know with me, there was a time where I didn't have the tools, I didn't have the equipment, I didn't have the knowledge to be able to embrace something that was really standoffish for me. So the reason why I screwed with my head and played with my head was because I didn't have the knowledge. So how do you get the ability to embrace something if you don't have the knowledge?
I think you did have the knowledge, you just didn't know how to overlay it onto a different situation or scenario, because I learned my ability and my ability to embrace uncomfortable situations, I learned early on, probably at about the age of 16, no earlier than that, because life's easy when you're a kid to a certain degree. But I joined the military, and my embracing an uncomfortable situation was one of those obvious uncomfortable situations, and that was being cold, wet, tired, and hungry. And if I didn't have another option to go down joining the military, you know, being in the military as a Marine anyway, the majority of that career is being cold, wet, tired, and hungry. Now, I didn't like it at first, and I was like, well, I've got to get my head around this. And I found a way of doing it, and the way that I did it then was the weird thing is, to get over it, you have to think past it. So I'm like that. Once this is done, this cold, wet, tired, and hungry piece, I'm going to take an enormous sense of pride once it's over, look back on it and go, I'm able to do that. And that's going to make me feel good. So I got into it and I realized that keeping my mind busy and switched on in those cold, wet, tired, hungry periods allowed me to get through it. And I was always thinking about the fact that I'm, you know, not everyone can do this. I can do this. Got through it. Anyway, fast forward a load of years, I didn't know that that was something I'd learned to help me with my stigma, which was mental health. But then as I was going on that journey and I was trying to push it to one side and deny that I had it, when I was going through my issue with mental health, I was telling my mates that I had a problem with my hearing. That's why I was leaving the military. Now, I knew I was lying. Everyone knew why I was leaving. I was just trying to, I was doing it for my own benefit, and it was doing my, it was actually... I knew I was lying to myself, which was pissing me off even more subconsciously. Anyway, the journey went on and I decided that I've got to admit this to myself. I've got to embrace it. And then I've got to start talking openly and sharing it. And actually, once I got through it, like people ask me now, oh, what's the proudest moment of your life? Expecting me to say the military or kids or whatever. And they are, don't get me wrong, they are. But to be honest, the proudest thing for me was to be able to get through my battle with mental health by openly being honest.
What is I obviously know what it stands for, but like, what is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder? Like, how does that manifest in?
It's different. It'll manifest 8 billion different ways, and each time, like, everyone has gone through PTSD. Like, being born, no doubt, as a youngster, or after time, young toddlers, babies cry. It's probably because they're remembering that traumatic experience. I don't know. They probably dream it. So everyone's embraced it. PTSD is just a your own reaction, and it could look like anything, to a traumatic or traumatic events. And mine wasn't. Everyone thinks that I suffered with it, and it manifested itself in the Hollywood sense of the disorder. Like, I'd be walking down the street, a car would backfire, and I'd dive behind a load of bins, and it wasn't anything like that. I just over a period of time suddenly felt differently about the job I was doing, and I didn't feel motivated. I wasn't loving it, and it started to piss me off because I couldn't motivate myself. And obviously, I couldn't motivate myself because in the back of my head, I was just suffering with loads of stuff coming at me at once. And it wasn't just, like, to be honest, I was happy with my military career. I was pretty good at it. Yes, it was stressful. Yes, it had an impact, and it was definitely a catalyst to me getting PTSD and struggling with mental health. But ultimately, it was everything else that happened at the same time, like getting married, divorced, kids really ill, fucking car breaks down, washing machine breaks down, I've got no cash in the bank. And ultimately, it was all the normal everyday life stuff that we all experience that we're never trained to deal with that fucked me up.
I do this thing, and I'm just wondering now if you would agree on this, right? So, I learned through my experiences that when you have something that's traumatic to you know, sometimes it's really easy to just okay, I'll wake up tomorrow and everything will be okay. Wake up the next day, everything will be okay. But if you don't deal with that traumatic experience, no matter how far you get away from that traumatic experience, there's always going to be something that triggers it unless you deal with it. You have to go back and deal with it to be able to get over it. That's what I feel I've learned. Is it the same for you? Do you believe that that's a real good process of dealing with anything that's traumatic to people?
Yeah, you've definitely got to deal with it. I think an issue that I've got is a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, just get a good night's sleep. You'll wake up in the morning feeling better. And I love that approach to life, but it is a slightly unrealistic. And so something that helped me is when I was told I would have to leave the military, I fought it. I was like, no. I'm like, this is my career. I'm supposed to be loving this. And over a period of time, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, this must be the thing. Because people kept telling me the thing that will fix you is to leave the military. So we'll remove what's fucking you up. So I'm like, okay, fine. These are professional people telling me this. So I'm like, that must be what I need. So I have a very short period of time that's, basically dedicated to me going. And then on April the 5th, which was that's what we call the TX date in the military. That's the date they transmit me, I'm gone. So on my TX date, which was the 5th of April, I left. I woke up on the 6th of April and I felt worse because I hadn't dealt with fuck all. But not only that, my identity and sense of belonging had been taken away, or I'd given it away. And I was like, well, hang on a minute, what's going on here? Well, they told me I'd feel better. I feel horrendous. And it's my fault because I wasn't dealing with it. I actually wasn't admitting it to myself. I was pretend Even though I was going around saying to the relevant people, oh yeah, struggle with PTSD, I've got, depression and a bit of burnout. I wasn't buying into it. I was like, yeah, whatever, it'll be fine. I'll just get on with it. And I wasn't dealing with it at all. So ultimately, if that someone does say, just get your head down. You'll wake up in the morning feeling better. You will, only if you've dealt with the problem that you've got before you get your head down.
So what was it that made triggered you to be able to sort of address it? What was there something, a thing, an event, a person who kind of forced you to think about it head on?
The event that forced me was being stood on top of a cliff, contemplating throwing myself off. I was having a mare, I was trying to engage in some form of therapy, but wasn't being honest with myself, didn't believe it. Just people pissed me off when I was going to therapy, not because of them, because of me. My relationship at the time had fallen apart. I was a nightmare to be around. So was that person. But anyway, I was a nightmare to be around.
You still are. I hate to say it. You still are.
I am. But basically, I had a meltdown, and I was like driving up to this viewpoint, and I was like, I failed at my career. I was good, but it just went wrong, and I'm no use to anyone. Like my partner, kids, I'm just a hindrance. And people always say, people that take their own lives are selfish, and they're not.
I agree with that.
They are always thinking about other people, and they're thinking about how they're impacting other people. And it's very drastic, and it's an irrational way to think, but that is what's going on in that person's head. And that's what was going on in mine. Anyway, got up to the cliff, obviously had a meltdown. I was bloody, I was crying and just didn't really know what to do. And I stood there. Now I'm not great with heights. I have a healthy respect for them. So I picked the wrong thing anyway. But I'm like peering down at the waves and stuff. And I was like, I either do this and everything goes black, but I don't think I'm ready for this. And I was like, so what am I, if I turn around and walk away, what do I have to do? And I've spoken about this before, and it was everyone thinks that there's a dark art to overcoming, and it wasn't. I suddenly realized I've got to be honest with myself, mainly. There is something that needs addressing. That was my moment that I realized I couldn't just go to bed and wake up the next morning, that something had to be done about it. Now, there was a lot of things that had to be done, but engaging in proper therapy was one, which is basically going on a journey to find someone that you can connect with.
What I find interesting and a real synergy that I have with you on that, right, is suicidal thoughts or tendencies, I feel, for me, was a process to get better. So I've been to the cliffs. I've sat on the edge. Now, I feel like I had to be in that position to know that I didn't want to die, because you have all these thoughts in your head of how easy it is. But until you get to that position where it's a reality of one step more, or, one swig more and under the water and it's kind of gone. For me, it was a process of even though, as you say, people say certain things about people who commit suicide. When you have suicide thoughts or suicide tendencies, the process is to kind of get to that point to realize, okay, I probably can't get any lower now. And this is my point of starting to climb out of the hole. It's like, did you feel like it was a process when you say, talk about standing on top of the cliff? It was a process rather than an end. It was a process to the start rather than the means to an end.
I look back on that, and it was definitely a process. It was definitely something that I had to go through. And I'm actually glad I did. And you've got to be careful how we word this, but I spent a lot of my life being in extremely close to death situations, and I've never felt more alive, excited, scared, but alive. And it's almost like, I've never thought of it this way until you've just started talking about it then, but I obviously had to go back to something like that to remind me that there is shit out there still worth living for. It's definitely a process. I'm glad that that happened. Yeah. The problem is, I think some people go on that journey, they get to that part of the process, and all of a sudden they've done something and it's gone past the point of no return. That's the sad bit. That's the bit that I've got lots of friends who've taken their own lives, and I'm like, oh, I sort of get where you were at, but you've gone and taken it just that little You know, you just had to look at it. You didn't have to, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. You could just go through the process rather than, you know, the process of getting better rather than the process of that step, which is the fatality of worse.
And where, obviously, the huge statistics, aren't there? The biggest killer of men under the age of 50 is suicide. How much do you think the issue of gender and stigma of mental health play a part here? Because it seems that men have, there's so many sort of societal expectations, particularly for, you know, hugely strong rugby player.
Well, I think him more than me. You know, I think him more than me.
No, not at all. It is probably at some point. I was a completely different person when I left to the person that I was when I joined up.
Right.
And a lot of people join the military because they've already got mental health issues, because they've grown up in disadvantaged areas of the country, disadvantaged backgrounds. My background wasn't disadvantaged, but I was from a poor part of the world, and you know, I didn't do well at school. That's why I joined up. I had no other option.
Mm.
So yeah, and also I was a scrawny little kid who got bullied at school, and quite frankly, I wanted to prove to the world that I was hard as fuck. I didn't know what I was going to do, but that's why I did it to a certain degree. Then enjoyed it after a while, and then found out I was good at it. So it was all, I never had a plan. I don't think many people do have a plan, but ultimately what we're talking about is culture within organizations or groups, and the culture within the military, I'm not going to say it was bad, but it didn't sort of promote talking about how you feel. And I'd suggest that rugby is pretty much, or was pretty much, the same. It had a bad culture when it came to talking about things or being honest about who you really were.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, I agree, but I feel sometimes that these ain't excuses, but there's kind of reasons, and I'm wondering if within the military it's the same. So for instance, to be openly gay for myself in rugby was scary because I didn't want to be any different to anyone else. And I didn't want anyone else to treat me any different to anyone else, because I know from my short time on the SAS with the program with you is that you want to be treated like everyone else. You want to be spoken to like you don't want to be defined by something that's different. And I felt within sport, or even within society, that if I speak about something that is a potential weakness, or if I speak about something that kind of opens me up a little bit to people, then that's going to be difficult for my career. And I just want to be a rugby player. You just want to be in the army. You don't want to be any different to anyone else. You don't want to be treated any different to anyone else. Yet the fear of opening yourselves up to that is a definite possibility.
That was my fear. That's why I didn't want to talk about it. I tried to keep it off the record for ages because I was scared that I was going to lose my career, which I did. Mainly because I wasn't being honest with myself, but it was also to do with the stigma at the time. So when did you come out?
2010. Helen tells me.
How much longer had you got left to play in professional rugby?
So I played for two more years after that. I kind of decided to retire. So I basically played my whole career being very unauthentic. And
the reason I ask is obviously being gay in the military for a long time was illegal. You couldn't. If you got rumbled, you'd get kicked out. Now, I got a mate, and he was a PTI. He was a commando-trained PTI. I'm not going to... Yeah, I'll keep it sort of vague. But we'd known each other. We still know each other, actually. But he had been in the military for yonks, okay? We all went on a sports tour. It was a Royal Marines sports tour. It was in 2001, and it was not long after that they had got rid of that rule. Okay, we'd flown out. We were abroad. It was in a nice place, it was in the tropics, and he sat us down. So there's all lads. We're all sat down having a few beers, and he's like, "Lads, I've got something I need to I need to tell you. And we're like, we're here to get this, mate. What's going on? Anyway, he's like, he goes, I'm gay. And we're like, all right, okay. Do you want a beer? And yeah. For us, it was, I didn't see what the problem should to be. Also, what I'll say, not one of us knew.
Oh, really?
Not one of us knew, no. But it made, like, that was in 2001 and no one cared. No one cared. No, that's wrong. Everyone cared, but it didn't make a blind bit of difference. And actually, we went out of our way to begin with to make sure he knew that we didn't care about what it was. We cared about him, but we didn't care about, you know, all the other things that went with it. And I'd be interested to, I never spoke to him about it, actually, about that stigma and what he was thinking would be the reaction.
The thing is, I think with something like that, see, that is when somebody has something to hide, right, or they're hiding something, what people don't realise then is maybe their actions, right, or the language that they use, because they don't know anyone in that area, in that vicinity, is gay or whatever, whatever is their difference or the characteristic, right? Because you can create an environment where you can be using discriminative words without knowing you're being discriminative towards anyone. Where you can action, or you can say, I don't know, kind of laddish, and I hate the term banter, you know, where you can use that terminology and you're actually offending somebody, but you don't know that you're being offensive. So you create this, let's say, you know, like the army, right? As I can imagine, it's a very masculine environment, right? Very tough environment, very alpha, kind of people fighting for levels of where they're at. And sometimes people can say and do things that can be very offensive without knowing they're being offensive. And to me, in rugby, that was certainly the case.
It's just a systemic attitude towards...
It's culture.
But it will have perpetuated a feeling in people who couldn't be open about their differences because they didn't associate with the language. It was always in a derogatory or negative mode in a space.
Yeah, like one of my best mates, right, Martin Williams, flanker for Wales, right? Great rugby player. I was rooming with him at the time when I told my teammates way before I became public. Made it public knowledge. And my Nuggets reaction was exactly your reaction. He said, and let's have a beer. Yet a week previous to that, I sat in a room where we were analysing, I think it was Ireland we were playing on the weekend, and I heard homophobic language like you wouldn't believe about the Irish team.
Mate, do you know what? It's just because that had become... It had become the norm to use that sort of thing. It was like using the word shit.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it shouldn't have happened, but it did.
Yeah.
If you could take yourselves back to your moments when you had your sort of felt your worst stigma, what, looking back on it now, what advice would you give yourself or someone else in that situation?
Instead of going back to when I was in that period of terrible self-stigma, self-stigmatizing, I'd go back further to when I was a youngster starting life as an adult at 16, because I would never change anything that I've done in my life, but I would go back and tell that young person that you're starting your journey in life as an adult. It's going to be unright life, but it's also hard work. And when you feel low down and negative about yourself, situations you're in, whatever it is, don't worry about it. That is normal. You are allowed to feel like that. Embrace it. Go and find people to talk to, because they will help you deal with that situation. And I didn't know that at the time, because society wasn't in that sort of place. And I think it would be that I would change. If you're hell-bent on me giving you an answer to what would you say to yourself, it would be a case of, I'd just reassure myself that this is a natural, it's a human thing. The thing, here we go. We fight stuff that is natural. We shouldn't feel like this. Yeah, but you haven't chosen to feel like this and you don't want to feel like this, which means you should be feeling like this for some reason. It means it's basically you telling you that you need to pay attention to a few things and look at what needs fixing. That's, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone says, oh, I shouldn't feel like this. And you're like, ah, yeah, but you do. So we should look at that. You know, why do you feel like this? Don't tell yourself you shouldn't. The one thing, you know, I go back to use an emotion that's reasonably easy to talk about, sadness, you know, being upset. We, in our culture here in this country, we're pretty bad at dealing with sadness. We keep telling everyone to shut up, don't cry. I've absolutely beasted myself because in the past I've told my missus, oh, come on, don't cry. Just because I'm shit at dealing with it. That's, yeah. And I've been like, that's out of order. This, in our society, we're like, she needs to calm down. We should embrace the emotion. We shouldn't let emotion dictate our actions, but we should embrace it.
Yeah, and I think accept it, because I think if I did one thing, and I wasn't sure what to say, and I think at the start of the conversation, when Foxy said about burpees, is you enjoy burpees because you hate them. And I think would be to understand that I have to go through that moment in time to get to where I want to be and to be the version of me that I want to be. I think it's really easy when you have difficult times to wish that they never happened. But when you get to the other side of the difficult times, then you're a better version of yourself. You look back, you're stronger. You're everything like the burpee scenario of, I don't want to do this, but I know if I do one or if I do two, I'm going to be feeling good about myself because I've done something and got through something that I didn't want to do. So I think for me, the one thing I would say to myself, yeah, I think the talking scenario is really important. It's a cliche, but it's really, really important. But to realize that when I get through this, which I will get through it with the help of others, and knowledge myself, then I'll be the version of myself that I want to look in the mirror and see.
And this comes back to building resilience. You know, some of these behaviours and things, and obviously some of the things we've been talking about here, I've got two kids, and for me, some of those things there that I think you could take as really good parenting skills in terms of how you encourage and support your kids to accept emotions, roll with the emotions, the ups and downs of life, and accept that everything is not always going to go your way. Where do you think we could be doing more in society to build that resilience, build that mindset of managing emotions? Foxy, you said, you know, we're getting better as society, but we're not there yet. And obviously, I think you still see within the UK different groups and different sectors of society probably more progressive with it than others. How do we take everybody on that journey to, you know, be more open and sort of, you know, ultimately tackling all types of stigma?
My answer is going to sound a little bit too simplistic because there's a lot of nuances as to living in society. But the thing that the military and sport have in common is everyone on that field, arena, battlefield, whatever, has got a common goal. They've got a mission statement, okay? You know, you're all working towards the same thing. Now, the issue is society. I could say that the country, and that would be like, or the nation, or whatever you want to call it. It would be great if we could get everyone to buy in to the mission statement that we all live in a society. And living in a society means you're part of a community. And to be part of a community, you need to think about other people. Now, everyone's common goal, I should expect, I hope, is to lead a happy life. Let's help everyone lead a happy life. So that, like, if you could somehow package that, get it communicated properly, then we might start to be on the road to actually living in a society that's nice to live in. And then we can start spreading that and get everyone else to buy into it around the world. Basically have a mission statement for the planet for 8 billion people. Problem is, there's a lot of egos out there. There's a lot of narrow-minded people, and there's a lot of people that don't get communicated to, and that's the issue.
Also, that's a great way, I was thinking about when Fox is talking about it, that's a great way of dealing with stigma as well. Is having that common goal, that common message. Therefore, people don't discriminate through lack of education. They educate first because everybody's kind of the same mindset.
Yeah.
Yep.
That works.
I'd like to think we do. The thing is, society is just like a human being. We're a work in progress. You know, we're learning as we go. Well, I say we're learning, but we should theoretically be striving for excellence. We want to be a better version of ourselves. And if we want to do that personally, then surely we want to do that as a society, as a community, as a group. Like, businesses should be wanting to do that. Organizations should be wanting to do that.
Can I ask you one more question? I've just realised I forgot to ask you about 2 years, well, just under 2 years ago, the military changed the policy around people living with HIV who are on effective treatment being able to do full active service. And obviously the hope is, and that's been great, obviously that was, you know, motivated by a young pilot who was living with HIV, and when he found out his status, was basically put on limited services whilst you know, because of the existing policy that had been there for decades. The policy was changed because the science has enabled people to live, you know, and therefore the science enables that people can live very full lives and shouldn't be limited in their careers or anything that they can do. It was obviously quite a watershed moment for the forces to make that shift in policy. And I don't know, do you think that that will materially have changed or will impact and improve stigma around LGBTQ and HIV within the forces? You know, I don't know if you're still in touch with anyone to know whether there's really been a material shift as a result of that policy change.
I'm still in touch with people that are still in the forces. The thing is, the weird thing is, the people that we were quite... I'd say the guys and girls that I've worked with are very liberal in their approach to sort of things like that anyway.
So it wouldn't have made a difference.
They embrace stuff. The problem is the organisation has a party line because it doesn't understand something. A lot of why things don't progress is because of a lack of understanding. Mm. It's nice to see that the military have done that, and I think it will obviously change. The military are it's a funny organization because sometimes they're so forward thinking in things that they do, like adapting procedures and tactics and learning from mistakes and, you know, being the first to, you know, when it comes to like trauma, medical trauma, they lead, you know, the normal hospitals in society itself, they take stuff that the military have learned in the battlefield. Because it's brutal, and yet when it comes to dealing with people, they're a little bit archaic. And the
It'll
weird
take
thing
time.
Is, yeah, it takes time. But the military, you know, I don't think we in general want to be shit at everything and be horrible to people. A lot it comes down to not understanding, not understanding a person, where they're at, what's happening to them, how it might impact you. Lack of understanding. But I mean, it's awesome that the military have done that because it's a forward shift in how people view something and their approach.
Yeah, particularly in a very sort of, like you say, historically conservative institution. We are running sadly out of time, so I'm just going to ask both of you a bit of a closing piece around for people listening to the podcast. What can they do? Gareth, I don't know if you can comment on, you know, people who are, you know, facing into stigma of HIV. What could they do?
From my experiences, I think education is key. Tackle HIV has a place on socials. TackleHIV.org has a website. Again, where I feel it's important to have the ability to go to places where you have guaranteed factual information rather than maybe the little rabbit warren of trying to find things out yourself on a Google search or speaking to somebody who you think knows but doesn't actually know, therefore gives you wrong information. So for me, I think on most areas of stigma, that stigma is created because there's lack of education, there's lack of knowledge. So education to me is key.
Thanks, Gareth. And Foxy, what about you? What would your advice be? Where would you
support people to go?
Yeah, where would you encourage them to look to get advice and support? Apart from to read your new book.
No, Embrace Chaos, out 25th of April. for me, like, if you are feeling because of something that's happened to you in a low place where you don't feel understood, you need to look for that community of people that are going to understand you and go on a journey. And that it's not going to be easy. I'm not going to bullshit anyone. It is not going to be easy. It's going to be hard work, but it is well worth digging in and going on that journey of finding the right people, the right organizations, because when you do find them, it's empowering. And you feel and become a better person for it. You'll be a more understanding person. So whether you have been diagnosed with HIV, PTSD, any sort of mental health, anything, you're starting another part of your journey, and you've just got, it requires grit and determination. There's no easy way out. But the biggest thing is finding people that understand you so you can then learn from them, and finding those organizations that have got the right information for you, that is guaranteed proper, solid information that you can take strength from, I believe. So it's the same as what Gareth said, just worded differently.
Perfect. Thank you. I mean, this has been a really good conversation, really insightful. And it sounds like ultimately together, the difference is through compassion, communication, knowledge and education. And this is really what these podcasts are all about, with tackling stigma. So massive thank you to you, Foxy, for joining us today for this episode of the Talking Stigma podcast. For more information, please go to tacklehiv.org or visit the Terence Higgins Trust website. Please do also follow us on social media at TackleHIV and look out for future episodes where we'll be talking to other well-known guests about stigma. Thanks for listening.